CliffCentral.com.
360 Biz on CliffCentral.com.
Welcome to another amazing segment of 360 Biz. You are joining us today on Cliff Central with Bulelani Bala Bala and myself. And you guys normally know that we're rolling with Uteboho Mafodi, but right now he's out in the States entrepreneuring. But as I said, I'm not alone. I'm here with Mr. Bala Bala. Hey, Mr. Bala Bala, how are you?
Hey, how are you? Are you good?
I'm good. I'm good on this warm day.
I'm very good, primarily because when I walked in, I saw an avalanche of something that looked extremely good. Something I've been fighting for months. Something I've been fighting off at the gym. I saw food. We've got amazing people today. Amazing people today. Amazing. The thing is, I'm sorry, I keep repeating myself because I'm enamored by what's on the other side of the studio glass on the table. I'm that guy, you know. My mother once told me that, and it became a resonating truth that, you know, the lady's going to get to your stomach is the lady's going to get you. So, siyobona,
njengiyadlala. Eva, no, I'm good. I'm good on this beautiful day. I'm also very excited to taste all the food that we have today because we have four wonderful ladies that are not just going to share information on the food industry with us, but they're also going to feed us. So we're going to taste real good food.
So who do we have coming up first?
So up first we have Wendy Ewurum. Did I say that correctly?
Almost. Ewurum.
Ewurum, yes. Yes, Wendy. Wendy Ewurum is the founder of Mocha Princess Farewell Charity Drive. Now, please say hi to our listeners and tell us what you do.
Hi, everybody, and thank you, 360, for having me to talk about my drive. This charity drive is something that started sort of spontaneously because I wanted to do something in the community with that is close to where I am. It's a very underprivileged community, mm-hmm. Zandspruit. And in seeking something to do, I went to the high schools, and I found out which high schools have a need. And the Far North High School was the one that really needed help in terms of what to do with their matriculants. And mm-hmm. at this point, it's getting them to a farewell. And then from the farewell, I'm working to do some workshops with them because my background is facilitation, assessment, and moderation in the workplace. So just some polishing up for them to prepare to go into the workplace if they have to look for jobs or tertiaries and to get interviews and things like that. So that is what I'm busy with.
Yeah, and I mean, of all the things that you could have done, looking as beautiful as you are, why this particular thing?
I think it's a desire to make a difference in somebody's life, a significant difference, because, you know, we all have a history. And looking at these children, I've been to the school and I've met them, and some of them come from child-headed homes. So you can imagine that they've never had a celebration in their lives that is pertinent to them and about them. So it was just one thing that I thought this could be something that inspires a child to think there is more to life and that I can do for myself, because there are people out there who care mm-hmm. about my circumstance and who care about who I am. And that was the primary motivator behind starting the project.
Okay, and I hear you referring to children. Does that mean you help both girls and boys?
Yes, actually, the title, a Mocha Princess Project, is sort of like misleading because it started off as me wanting to dress 10 girls for the matric ball. And then it sort of spiraled to the point where I'm sitting with you, where mm-hmm. everybody just got involved and I saw a bigger need. And so I'm working as much as I can to just find resources for all the kids. There's 69 of them in this class.
So, I mean, you know, I think a couple of months ago there were tweets that were going around on social media mm-hmm. where one individual didn't see it necessary or important for young kids to go to a farewell or a matric mm-hmm. dance. I mean, how important is it for, I mean, young students to experience such a thing?
I think it's not even so much about the matric dance per se as celebrating a milestone, a major milestone in their lives. You know, we look at teens today, and some of them by matric, they've got two kids. And they've got less challenges than these children. They've got a mother at home. They've got a father at home. And then you come across these kids who have had so many roadblocks in their lives, and they still push through, and they're finishing matric, and they're going to, you know, some of them have bursaries already to university. So you can imagine how well they are doing. And they come from homes where the mother will sometimes pitch up once every 2 months to check on them. I've got a set of twins. They're 17 or so. These kids are raising themselves. And I think that's a reason to celebrate them. That is why, for me, this is so important. And one person, as you say, some people, I don't see it as a necessity. One person said to me as a response to the ad, if it was stationary, yes, I would. But this is frivolous. That was the message. And for me, I dug deep and I thought to myself, that's like telling my child, I bought you stationary so you can't have a birthday. You know, that those two don't mesh. Those are two separate things. This kind of thing inspires the human spirit. As much as it's necessary to have the tools to write at school, it's also important to be inspired and motivated to do better in life and to know that there are people who care about your circumstance and want better for you.
And, you know, when the matric balls are known to cost a lot of money.
Yes.
I mean, these days people go wild with it. You know, just the other day I was reading an article about learners paying 10,000s of rands for matric balls. Mm-hmm. Now, how does this cost?
Okay.
Matric
in terms of
you?
Cost for me, and that what I had in mind was that, and how I have been running it, is collecting evening wear that is gently used from people who are no longer using it. So today it's no longer really ball gowns per se. It's just something like a cocktail dress that you're no longer wearing that you can drop off for me at my local church, which is in Honeydew Calvary Chapel. The doors are open for you to drop off whatever you have, costume, jewelry, shoes that you know you've worn them a couple of times, you don't need them anymore. That kind of thing. Men's suits. You know, I've got people who have contributed men's suits and those waistcoats, you know, those evening things that are quite elaborate that you can wear on top of a shirt and a pants and look made up. So things like that. However, there is a cost, which is why I'm making the appeal right now to whoever is listening. I was not aware when I started with the school that the kids have to make this happen. There is a cost of 550 rand that they have to pay in to make the event happen. And I found this last week, and it was coincidental because it was when I got the invitation to come here. And so there is this 34,000 rand that needs to be paid for a venue or somebody who can sponsor a venue for these kids. That would be wonderfully appreciated.
And then now, you know, just sitting here, I mean, your cause, I think that the biggest thing that I always advocate, because there's an initiative that we run where we go to schools,
yes,
and one of the biggest things that we advocate for is experience. And I think that more than anything, that gives kids a ginormous experience. Have you been seeing any support in terms of corporates coming to the party or government coming to the party with regards to this?
No, not as yet. I have not. But I have to confess, this is the first time I'm really speaking about this to a larger audience. It's mainly been people who are within my social media space and within my church community, and they've really come to the party in terms of, I think we can dress 20 kids now, and I've got 25 to go of the kids that needed clothes. But then there is now this issue of this venue and the food that needs to be put together. So that is my other part of the projects that I'm pushing out.
Yeah. Before I throw it back to Leah, I think it's a great cause. I'm definitely going to support you, but
thank
more
you
than
so
that
much.
We'll put you through to some other platforms I can't mention here at home because I'll probably get my butt kicked out. But we love the initiative. I mean,
God bless you guys.
Yeah, it
thank
definitely
you.
Is a very good initiative, and it's something that is actually close to my heart, you know, that I also have been involved in even in previous years, so it is a great thing.
Thank you.
To do,
thank
you, Wendy. But like looking at the fact that you're an education, training and development practitioner involved in all kinds of other things, you know, where do you get the time?
Well, I actually have quite a big family, and at some point in time I had to pull back to do consulting work just to be able to raise my kids. And I think that is why I also have an affinity for these children, because I think children, it is so important for you to input into them what you want to get out of them. So that is why I made myself more available. And because I'm consulting and I'm freelancing, it is not as hectic for me as it used to be when I was doing an 8-to-5. So I am able to plan around and facilitate this.
Now, Wendy, before I ask you how people get a hold of you, I'm reading the name of the scripture. What is it? Mocha?
Mocha Sheikh. Yes, it's
everything from your surname to the
It's actually a lifestyle blog about myself and my family, my friends, and I have an affinity for fashion, so that's the chic part, and loving being on of the African continent, that's the mocha part. Yeah, so that is what my blog is.
So, I mean, how do people get a hold of you?
You can email me at wendy@mochachic.co.za, or my cell phone number. Can I give it?
Yeah, well
should I leave it? I'm not sure. I'm also on the blog, so you are able to go to the contact page, and I am able to then contact you. Particularly if you want to give to the course, there is a page dedicated to it and a contact form that you can fill in attached to that.
And then, Wendy, man, you know, women, I think what you're doing is now describe a social entrepreneurship. And, I mean, you're an entrepreneur in your own right, because you're trying to advocate for these young kids more than anything.
Yes, I am.
What are some of the challenges you come across? Because, I mean, someone is probably sitting wherever they're sitting, thinking it's just a rosy and a smooth journey. You're speaking so eloquent, so you probably have all the funds. You send out proposals, you get whatever you need.
No.
What are some of the challenges you come across?
I think everybody thinks, oh, the next person will do it. There will be somebody who will give, and they just, go on with their merry way. And also sharing the project is a challenge. You know, you put something out on social media and people read and like. A like is not as effective as a share. Talking about it and giving it exposure, and also the doing. And sometimes people think that, oh, I have to give something really elaborate. Anything that you would be able to, that would be able to help another child would be great. And also considering the fact that we would like to take this to those workshops next year, January, February, workshop these kids so that they able. You know, I found out when I was doing learnerships, if I can digress just a bit, that when we get children from such environments, it's hard for them to acclimatize to the workplace. So things like work etiquette, business communication, you know, for entry level jobs, giving them that base would be a good thing. So, contributing things like printing paper, as simple as that. Yeah. Those are the things we're going to need to run the workshops, and maybe an overhead projector. The school doesn't have one. They've given you the facility to run the programs on a Saturday.
Thank you so much, Wendy. That was Wendy Owuram from Mocha Princess Fell Charity Drive. If you're out there and can help, please do.
Thank you.
360 Biz on cliffcentral.com.
If you've just tuned in, this is 360 Biz at Cliff Central with Bulani Balabala and Via Ndondlo. Our discussion today is on young entrepreneurs who are in the food industry. Now, let me take this opportunity to welcome Off the Wall Pop Restaurant, Kanyam Zongwana.
Pop-up restaurant.
Okay, excuse me. Can you please introduce yourself and tell us what you do?
Okay, what's up? I'm Kanya. I'm a food entrepreneur. I'm a food writer, food stylist, and I own a pop-up dinner or a mobile restaurant experience with my boyfriend, Sakile. And yeah, we just basically do things in and around Gauteng.
Okay, and then with us in studio as well, we have Nokutula Ramaphosa, director of Cake World SA. Nokutula,
hi.
Tell our listeners and tell us what it is you do.
Hi, everyone. I'm Nokutula Ramaphosa. I co-own Cake World with my sister, Uthokozile Mahlangu. We have a cake factory in Roslyn that started last year in September, so it's about a year and a couple of months now. We bake everything. We make cakes from birthday cakes, wedding cakes, everything. Yeah.
Okay, and with us as well, we have the Social Hub from Pretoria. Can you say hi to our listeners and tell us what you do?
Hello, everyone. My name is Masuho of Meals with Masuho, and I'm the co-owner of the Social Hub and the head chef of the Social Hub.
I'm Andy Lemboyana. Co-founder as well of the Social Hub and senior mixologist of the Social Hub.
Okay, can you please just do that for us again?
All right, sorry about that. So it's Andy Lemboyana, co-founder of the Social Hub and head mixologist at the Social Hub.
Okay, let's go back to Cake World, right? Cake World, can you tell us what inspired the business?
I studied culinary arts and my sister studied hotel management. So we started brainstorming Cake World last year in March, and we actually wanted to open a restaurant, but cakes seemed more exciting and more appealing to us. So then we decided to then start a cake factory, and yeah,
So I mean, but of all the things, I mean, what inspired you guys to go into this particular business?
Because there was a great demand for cakes in the north of Pretoria, so we saw a gap there, and then we decided to go for it.
Okay, and then who is your target market?
We cater for convention centers, and we have in-house walk-in clients as well.
So I mean, here's the thing, you guys are in the cake place, but my instant thing as an entrepreneur is that, I mean, I'm a cake boy, what is it about you guys that makes you guys different?
Our customer relation.
Okay.
We allow our customers to go all out with their cakes, and to, like, we make it exactly as they want it, as well as our flavors. We have over 28 flavors in our cake factory. Yeah.
So here's the thing. Like, I feel like you're unfair with me, because I went to you guys' website and I saw some of the cakes. So you guys do custom bespoke cakes. So tell us a little bit about that. I mean, I think that to me, baking cakes is one thing, and then the artistry around being able to sculpt them into different shapes, into different products, into different things, is a skill that one acquires. Number one, how'd you get that skill? Number two, why that particular thing?
We learned that inside the factory. Once we started, we taught ourselves how to make that. And yeah.
Okay, creativity then, Noctula, is a big thing in your industry, right? So how does then innovation affect your business?
Hence our slogan, you think it, we make it. So whatever you have in mind, we make it for you.
Anything.
We make everything.
So, I mean, do you guys come from a background at home that inspired cooking or the culinary arts?
Yes. Our grandmother used to bake. She actually taught us. But our love has always been on food. So that's why we took our grandmother in. She also works with us at the factory. She does most of the, she creates most of the recipes.
Hey, Coco. Yes. So, I mean, wait, is she selling you guys these recipes? Or she's just giving?
She sells them to us.
Have you thought of moving to other areas besides Pretoria?
Yes, we are currently working on a deal in Mpumalanga. We've also, we are also looking at going into malls, opening small shops in malls, but baking from the factory, moving cakes to the shops in the malls.
Okay, all right. That's Noctula from Cake World Sisters. Right.
Thank you.
Here in studio, we also have Okanya, right, from the pop-up restaurant. Now, can you just remind us what it is you do?
Okay, well, we do events mainly in and around Gauteng. We do food events. My partner is Usa Kilengazi. He's a vinyl DJ. So he kind of creates the soundscapes around all of our experiences, and then I do a menu, so we kind of collaborate in that way. This year we were sort of thematizing it with like different like culinary rich countries around the world and stuff, and we kind of got bored with that. So next year we're going to be doing a lot of different types of experiences in areas, and we're going to be focusing a lot on Soweto as well. So yeah.
Okay, can you just quickly just dwell on the pop-up part of your...
Okay, well, basically what happens is we have this once-a-month event that we host. We sell tickets online. We focus mainly on social media, and we seat about 50 people. It's a very interactive dining experience. It's like one long table, and we usually do like a 4-to-5-course meal and offer a drink, and then there's a bar. So it's a pretty cool dining experience.
Oh, okay. All right. And then just tell me then, as a food company, how much pressure do other big food companies have on your business?
Not much, really, because we don't really cater for the same crowd, you know, we don't create the same experience. So, you know, we do get inspired by the way that they run their businesses and stuff, but we're not particularly threatened because what we offer is it's small, it's intimate, and it's exclusive.
So I think that one of the biggest things about entrepreneurship is how quick you turn your sales, more than anything. So, I mean, I think for you, I think one of the questions I have is, in terms of your sales cycle, how active is it? Because, I mean, what you're bringing is not the conventional way of, you know, going out and having something to eat when these restaurants and drive-thrus all around. So, I mean, how hard are you guys finding it in terms of customer education with regards to this experience that you guys are bringing to the fore?
Well, look, yes, it is very educational, and it is something that we do once a month. But we've got, like, various streams of revenue that come into the business besides just the pop-up itself. I'm also a private chef as well. I cook in people's houses. I do a lot of food writing as well, which is another stream of revenue. And I'm a food stylist, so I work with a lot of magazines, and I do a lot of food activations. It isn't easy because at the moment we're trying to break into a new part of the food industry where people are still getting used to the idea of this sort of dining, you know, and it isn't easy. Like it is very much trying to put people onto this idea that you don't really have to eat at, you know, insert franchise restaurants. So.
Yeah, and then, I mean, what sort of industry regulations you feel are out there that are kind of hampering you guys from doing business?
Not many. We kind of have this. We have this philosophy at Off the Wall that, you know, we're basically allowed to do whatever we want, you know. Sakile is on the music side of things, and, you know, we always just encourage each other to kind of break bounds and do whatever we want. So we don't let a lot of these things hold us back, you know, these rules that they've created for us as practitioners of food.
And then, I mean, just take us on a mind trip. I mean, I like doing this, especially when we're doing interviews, so that, you know, listeners can understand the vision and thoughts behind what you guys are trying to build. I mean, take us to the next 5 years. What does your business look like in the next 5 years? And what are you guys specializing in typically?
Well, for us, what's really important is we're kind of doing it as we go along. But what's really important for us is getting, you know, the young black youth into the food industry. Not into the food industry, but into, you know, the idea of eating. We're trying to remove the class distinction from food. We believe that everyone deserves to eat well. You know, everyone deserves the experience that we're providing. So that's why we're taking it to the doorsteps of like Soweto, for instance, and places in Port Elizabeth. I probably shouldn't have said that yet. But because something that's very important for us as well as a company is to kind of kill the idea that the places that we grew up in are kind of not viable places to run business and to display our art and stuff, you know.
So I'd like to, you know, hog this opportunity and invite you to my hood in Tembisa and come do this.
I've been thinking about Tembisa.
No, come through, man. Come through. I mean, we're running an initiative on the 25th, Small Business Development, Innovation Development in Tembisa. We're going to have some high-ranking government officials come through. It'd be nice for people to get an corporate as well, so they can sample out some of the things you have. And even if you don't have products, come with some of your flyers and business cards. As a serial entrepreneur, you know you got a network.
Yeah.
But selfishly so, Tembisa is the second biggest township in South Africa. Come.
I will.
Okay, let's move on then to the social hub in Pretoria. Okay, can you guys just remind us again who you are and what you do?
Okay, once again, I'm Masiho, and I'm the head chef of the social hub. The social hub is in the heart of Soshanguve, which is not too far from Pretoria CBD. Our place is a food orientated place, more than just a hangout spot. So yeah, that's about it.
Okay, and then what makes the social hub unique?
It's the kind of ambiance that we have created, you know. and the kind of food that we serve as well. It's very different from the normal restaurants that you get from around the Kasi. Because in the Kasi you find like your normal African cuisine. So we actually serve that it's a street food setup menu so that people don't have to always have to drive when they think of having like a good meal, you know. So that's what we're actually trying to give to the people in our hood.
Yeah, and you know, one of the things I've noticed on your social pages is that you guys also have books, you know, in your setup.
You've got a read and let read initiative.
Okay.
We're not mainly focusing on children only, but adults are also involved as well. We've got people who are donating books as well. It's mainly there to just let the kids be more educated, you know, and not focus mainly on things from the streets. So education is a really important tool in life. So that's why we thought of having that initiative.
So, I mean, you know, a relative question out there that I'd like to pose to the four amazing companies in the room, and you guys could take turns answering this just so that people out there can better yet understand the industry, because it's useless if you come here and we don't educate, but we've got four experts that are zoning in different industries. What are some of the barriers to entry that you guys are facing as a small business, growing female-owned youth entrepreneurs, black-owned business that you guys are facing in terms of the industry when it comes to this particular sector?
If I may add, Andy from the Social Hub here, what we've picked up is the fact that you need to have capital. It's very hard to get out there with a dream and no financial backing. But what we managed to do is we made it work with what we had, right? So we didn't crush our dream because we didn't have enough money. We made use with what we could get, and so that was the plan. If you check out our page, the Social Hub 012 on social media, you'll see we actually made use of pellets, you know, because those were easy to find, easy to use, easy to sculpt and reuse. And then we wanted to give that township flavor as well, so we made use of crates as seating tools, you know. And people come back and they say, you know what, that actually takes me back to, you know, going to Gogo, you know, chilling and just relaxing. And we made use of what we had. So that was the biggest thing, capital, but we just overcome that barrier with using what we had.
The lovely lady from Y-Cook, just say hi to the listeners.
Hi everybody, I'm Matapelo Monto from Y-Cook. So basically I would also say just also being different, because everybody's like, you enter to catering, there's so many catering companies. So it's just really finding your niche, finding yourself to be different from others, what makes you different, and just go out there and pursue your dreams, I would say.
I think the fact that we do provide like an unusual sort of an experience is difficult for us as well. It's difficult to sell. It's easier to sell Spur, for instance. And I think what's difficult for us as well, another challenge is definitely resources. Resources have been a challenge because up until this point, we established in June 2014, and up until now, we haven't had any financial aid. So, you know, it hasn't been easy for us either, you know, but we're just trying to make this money.
I'd say it's cracking deeper into the market, because like to get out there we definitely need funds, and funding is something that's really scarce, especially if you're a very small business. So it would definitely be funding, and that I think that blocks a lot of things.
So another question I'd like to pose to everyone seated here in studio is funding. We know that funding is the very big challenge for any business. Have any of you guys received any type of funding? Social Hub?
No, we haven't actually, but we're planning on to. So yeah, we'll see how it goes. Yeah.
Yes, we did. When we first started, we got a loan. So yeah, that helped a lot.
Well, at the moment, I'm busy with J&B Hive, and they're kind of helping myself and other small businesses in terms of resources. And this is a very new thing. This was from like yesterday, so it's as recent as yesterday. But I got in touch with them, and they're basically helping us with all types of resources that we need. But like, the only catch is that you actually have to pitch for it at the beginning. You know, you have to put forward a compelling case in order to get whatever the resources are that you need. I think another big challenge is for Black businesses is like, when we do get funding, when we do get investment, we often don't know what to do with it. And businesses that are funded fail, you know, because they don't really know where to put the money, you know, for instance. So I think that's another big challenge.
We've had investment in our business, not much, but yes, we've had a bit of financial assistance from private companies. Yeah. But I think once your financial statements are right, that's like the crux of it, to show your growth. I don't think the bigger challenge really is getting the funding, is once your books show what you want and you're very strong and certain and know what you want, because I want funding, but what do you want funding for? I don't know. Mm-hmm. So that's the biggest problem. Get your books right, know what you want the funding for, and people will gladly assist.
Yeah, you know, while you're on that, I mean, it leads back to this third round question, because I mean, I think that the biggest thing that you're touching on there is that not just for the fact that one is capable, but for the fact that the business is compliant, mm-hmm. is compliant, which is one of the biggest things. I mean, we want funding, but we are not compliant. I mean, there's a couple of things that everyone touched on when they spoke: the authenticity, being unique, you know, in providing food and all that. And I mean, I think that one, if I'm able to join it with this question, with what you raised right now, is how important is it for you as a business? And I mean, we all know the value of the food industry in South Africa is huge. And I mean, with the food that we saw outside, we believe that you guys can have a huge chunk of that. But the biggest question that we'd like to ask is, how important is it for you guys to be very unique? But I mean, I think that what I've seen as a consumer is that you see people trying to compete on the basis of uniqueness, but at a certain point it doesn't become scalable any longer, because you won't be able to scale it to a certain degree, because you end up being the only individual who can do a certain thing, because you're trying to, you know, be too unique. So I think that maybe if you could dispel this this myth that I have: can you be too unique in the food industry? And I mean, what is the importance of being unique and standing out?
I think you can be unique, and it's what one should flourish on. But as much as you are unique, I think the food industry lacks service. Like, the professionalism in the industry sometimes lack, and this is why you find that whoever goes to whoever, because of lack of service, you know. It's just the attention to detail put in it, because sometimes we want our food to be so perfect, but yet late. So it's just that thing of combining the two, being professional and being very unique with your service as well.
Sorry, can we get that question again?
I think a shorter version of the question rather is, how important is it to be unique? And is there such a thing as trying to be too unique to the point where you lose your value proposition?
Okay. Well, you know, at Off the Wall, we don't aim to like try and shock people. You know, we're not that type of business. But we do try and provide like a really unpretentious food experience, in the sense that we don't try and alienate people with flavor combinations that they won't understand, for instance. And I do think that we are unique in what we do, and in the way that we, in our presentation, we're really unique. But we also do try and keep it really homely and authentic and comfortable and approachable, because for me, I think that's the best type of food, you know, food that's relatable. And I think that, you know, your taste buds develop and you acquire all these tastes and stuff and you learn about caviar and all those things. But I think that in terms of the flavors that people enjoy, I think we all develop that around like age 6 and 7, what things we like, you know, whether it's sweet, sour, savory, etc. So we do try not to alienate people by being, air quotes, too unique.
On our end, at the Social Hub, basically, we don't agree with the statement of being too unique. I believe you need to create a niche market, right? So Soshanguve, where we're from, all the food establishments, you know, it's the local typical spatlo joint, or you got your chesanyamas, and you know, it's more of the same. You know, you either order it and sit there and it will give it to you, takeaway kind of vibe, or you grab it and buy it for yourself, whereas we're giving a complete dining experience. So you sit down, we've got waiters who cater to all your needs and everything, and yet you are eating street food. Mm. So you've got your burgers, you've got your burris, you've got all this stuff with cheek kills, yet it's a proper dining experience, you know. Sorry about that. So I believe that's the difference with us as Sosh, and that's why people come running, because they don't have to no longer get onto the highway to go experience that, to go to your Brooklyn or whatever to experience a fine dining experience. We give that to them, and it's still comfortable. You know, you like Kanya said, it's unpretentious. As much as there's waiters and everything, you still, you know, I see how they address the waiters. You know, it's like, hey, my bra, how are you? Sure. You know, so it's, you still feel at home, although you are being catered for.
I think being unique is quite important, because it's what sets us apart. But what I realized is why Cook mentioned it is being professional. People are looking for that more than anything now, because you could be making something unique, but if you don't deliver on time or you don't deliver quality, or people are actually looking for good service now, apart from uniqueness, because we can all make cakes. I mean, the cake that I can make, I can put it on social media, someone else can make the same cake tomorrow, but being professional, that's not something everyone has, you know. And yeah.
So, I mean, I've heard a lot of women saying that they'd never date entrepreneurs. Your husband is here, and he's obviously supporting entrepreneurship. So just join us just for 2 seconds. I want to ask you, what has the experience been like supporting an entrepreneur?
It's been a very nice experience. I'm also an entrepreneur, so.
Oh.
So now we're in business together. So now she understands the late nights like I do.
Yeah, I think the biggest thing is, for the two brothers who are in the room, could we all just give them a round of applause? Because not a lot of guys support women in business. Nah, guys, you can do better than that. Before. So the beautiful lady from White Cook ran away. It's your turn now. We want to know, what is White Cook? Why White Cook? What are you cooking?
Okay. So basically, it's why should you cook when we offer the service to you? So why cook? So it's all about service. It's all about homemade food that has like flavor, you know, that not like, because when you go to a lot of restaurants, you find that it like misses that homely flavor, that taste. So that's what Cook is all about. We serve student meals. We've got student meals. So basically, students that are like in your Brahms universities and stuff like that. I remember when I was in varsity, it was horrible. I used to have slap chips and bread and stuff. So a nutritious meal is very, very, very important. So that's the service currently we're offering to the students. And as well, it's December time, you know, everybody's hosting. So that's what we're pushing currently. And we'd also do like your corporates as well. But definitely, it's all about the homemade, lovely, like umsonk, as Yolanda would say it. So it's the both of us in business, Yolanda Nomoyi and Matapelo Monso. Why cook? Just call us.
Yes, and how long then have you been operating? Because we've noticed that you're working with big brands, you know? That's what your website says.
Well, we've only been in business for 2 years. We work hard. Like, we really work hard. Even, like, we're always on our phones, always taking calls. It's all about service, and it's all about referrals. People that like you will refer you, and you need to just make sure that you nourish those relationships and just build them.
Yeah. So here's the thing. You guys do amazing stuff. I've interacted with you guys before.
Yeah.
So, I mean, tell us, why should we buy stuff from you guys? Because you guys do something amazing. You've got an amazing product. Tell us about that product.
Okay, so basically why the name Why Cook was that, before anything else, we started off with cooking for individuals. So you get home and you are tired and you don't have anything to eat. So basically what we'd do would provide 5 meals to you for the week. So instead of that, now providing it to individuals, the individual meals will kick back again starting next year, Feb sometime. And then for now, we've been just really focusing on the students. But really what's really set apart right now, especially in the corporate, people are just tired of saltless food. They just want food that really feels like, oh my gosh, this tastes awesome. So basically that's what we push. And not forgetting that we come from, like, I come from a very big family. So obviously, like, one wrong mistake, everybody's going to be on your case why your food is horrible. So you always had that pressure to, like, keep it up. Even sometimes, like Yolanda or I would, like, oh my gosh, something went wrong. We, like, also try to, like, kind of fix it and put that homely, pungent feel in it, you know. So, like, chicken pastas is not something that we grew up with, but also to just make it a bit homely and not like just bland and stuff. So really that's what we try to push. Why Coke?
So we know that students can be very difficult, you know, but besides that, there are a whole lot of things that they face in terms of finances. Has it been challenging maybe selling the idea to them, you know, having to pay for the service?
So what's great about the product is that we want actually students to pay. So if you're a group of six, you pay far less as if you an individual pay. So if you're a group of six, you end up paying like 200 rand a week. And if you're just buying for yourself, it's 325. So that, like, that's a major gap in terms of financials. But really, not at all. I mean, they receive their five meals that are pre-packed already. And it's one starch, one protein, and one veg, because it's unlikely students would go out and buy veggies. So it's just keeping it nutritious for them.
Okay, like we mentioned earlier, we've got a franchise expert in studio who will give us and these ladies guidance in franchise development and all the related package elements that they will need. Now, welcome, Nicola.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Can you please just share with us what exactly you do?
It's franchise owner-operator specialist company. We specialize in franchisor development at Franchise Directions. So successful business models that are looking to expand and take the next scary step of entrepreneurship, if they're that way geared. We assist companies to franchise their businesses. So from the franchise feasibility through the expansion plan phase all the way to the package elements, where we put together all the legal agreements and the disclosure documents. And but the first point really is that feasibility. Is this business franchisable? And it's great to sit here with all this energy in this room and all these exciting ideas and these young entrepreneurs. And franchising is not for everybody. It's in a very exciting business model. We're passionate about it, but it's really about evaluating a business and working out, is that business franchisable? Does it fit? You know, you're taking the next step. You're shifting from making a dining experience to putting somebody else into business and getting a return on investment for them. So it's a very different business. You don't flip hamburgers anymore. You make other people money and hopefully help them make themselves money.
So then what factors do you need to take into account when franchising a business?
So as much as, you know, there's been a lot of talk about uniqueness in the room. And as much as you do need to franchise something unique, there must be a unique positioning, something that you're offering customers. There is also that element in franchising where you're looking at standardization. Is it something that you can take a proven business model and replicate it? And you can teach somebody else how to run that business and how to make it a success in a different area. Franchising is on a spectrum, from a very loose agent type arrangement all the way to the very tight business format franchises, the food franchises that you probably all, you know, are not favorable towards because you like a bit of food flair, shall we say. But there is space for different models within that spectrum. It's working out where you fit on that spectrum. How would it work? What does the franchisor do? What does the franchisee do? Is there a supply entity? Does your cake business become the central kitchen to supply and become the hub to outlets in shopping malls? So it's examining those kind of things and obviously working out the profitability. A franchisor wants to make money, but so does a franchisee. And is there enough money in this pie for everybody to make money in that business?
You mentioned a little bit earlier on that franchising is not for everyone. I mean, is there a standard in terms of who it would be for, or is it rather more based on the model?
Look, I don't think Donald Trump should be setting up a franchise anytime soon, or Richard Branson. Franchising is really about finding compliant entrepreneurs. So when you're looking for people to join your business, you think that you're giving away control, but you've actually put everything in place so that it can be replicated. But you need compliant entrepreneurs, people who are willing to work within a system, who are willing to abide by the rules that you as the franchisor have set. You know, and those rules are varying degrees. A very tight business format franchise will tell you to switch on the milkshake machine at 11:03 a.m. But whereas others give you a little bit more flair for local area marketing, for local produce, it may be a 70%, 30% ratio. So it depends on the business. It varies. There isn't a one, it's not a cookie cutter approach, if I can use a food term.
So, I mean, in terms of the local franchises you guys have worked on, how many, what's the success rate for local ideas that have been franchised that have gone, take over South Africa?
In South Africa, most of the franchisors, we're looking at around about 700 franchisors in South Africa, and most of them are homegrown. Over 90% are homegrown. So we think of the young brands like KFC and McDonald's, but the majority of franchisor systems in South Africa have been born and bred in South Africa. A franchisor yet, though, takes a lot more a longer time to break even than a franchisee. It's a capital-intensive process, a get-rich-slowly scheme if you're a franchisor.
And then, how difficult or rather easy is it for someone to get into this space?
Into the franchisor space. As development consultants, a franchisor space is not something that people will typically fund. They have to have successful business models that almost fund that development process so that you prove your business model, you get it up and running, you have 1, 2, 3 company-owned branches, and in the beginning stages, those branches fund the franchise development. It's doing the homework, doing the business plan for the franchisor, and then you will ultimately get a return on investment once you start. Franchising is about critical mass. It's about numbers. Will you be able to open enough to recover the development costs of consultants and attorneys? But it's about having all the ducks in a row so that you don't make mistakes. If you're franchising something, you don't want to be franchising something and changing your mind later along the line about the rules of engagement or changing the fee structures after 2 years because you should have charged 6% of turnover, not 2%. Mm. It's really something that needs to be thought out very carefully in the beginning before you embark on it. And sometimes we have clients who don't embark on it. They get to the end of the feasibility stage, and for whatever reason, franchising is not for them, whether it's from a profitability perspective or sometimes just the fit on the culture of who can be a franchisor, because those relationships are very important in franchising.
Yeah. I wish we had enough time. I'd like to invite you back on the show or the other show that I do, just so you can shed more light. And I think that you've got a lot to give. I mean, I've been contemplating about this, but not too sure where to take my idea as well as an individual, because it was a natural progression in one of the businesses that I ran to franchise it. But I mean, as we wrap up the show, the culture of the show is that give us not more than 15 seconds inspiration to someone out there as an entrepreneur, and then just quickly, I mean, tell us, where do we find you? What's your website? I'll start on my right.
Okay, you can find The Social Hub on Facebook at The Social Hub 012, on Instagram at The Social Hub 012, as well as on Twitter, it's at The Social Hub 012, or you can email us on info@thesocialhub012.com.
Why Cook? You can find us Instagram, ycook_SA, Twitter, ycook_SA, email info@ycook, website www.ycook.co.za, cell phone number 0820722097, ycook.
You can reach me on Off the Wall Pop-Up Restaurant on Facebook. It's a page. And I'm Yulu Ishii on Twitter and Instagram. YULUISHII.
And franchise directions, if you're looking for franchise development or franchise training, it's www.franchise.co.za.
You can reach KQuelled on 012-568-1072. Our website is www.kqueld.co.za, and on Facebook we are KQuelled South Africa.
And that's it for this week's installment of 360 Biz. Tina Manja, we are going to eat. But thank you so much to all our guests, and thank you to our listeners.
360 Biz on CliffCentral.com. CliffCentral.com.